Kerrang! It's the night before. My name's Nick Majerison. Right, we're going to get someone on the airwaves now who, in theory, could well blow your mind. His name is David Wilcock. He's a researcher, a lecturer, a filmmaker, writer, and he's also in touch with a higher intelligence. You know, he's going to talk to us about how sometimes your own mind and your own thoughts might not be as private as you think. Let's get him on the air. David Wilcock, thanks for joining us on the show, man.
Nick, it's my pleasure. I'm really glad to be here.
So, well, let's start off with that. I mean, our thoughts are not always our own. What does that mean?
It's not a difficult concept to understand once you get down to what the mind really is. And that's the question you have to answer first. In the conventional scientific model, we would say that your mind is the result of the cells in your brain using electrochemical activity in order to generate thoughts. The problem is that when they try to find where in cells memories are stored, there is no one cell that can actually correspond to a particular memory. It appears to be very holographic in the sense that memories are stored throughout the entire brain.
So when you slice a brain up, you don't find a section marked memories.
Yeah, and there's some strange and a little bit grotesque experiments that have been done to show that all of these areas of the brain that we think respond to various things really don't. The most dramatic of which is that they've actually trained a salamander to go through a particular maze and then literally removed his brain and ground it up and then poured that slush of his brain back into his head. And he actually does live, and his body is obviously a little deformed. I mean, he can't walk as well as he used to, but he remembers the maze.
Wow. So what is, remind me of what sort of animal a salamander is.
Salamander's a little lizard creature.
Right. So you take a little lizard creature, you pull its brain out, squash it up, squeeze the brain back in, and then the salamander, confused though it is, can still remember the route through the maze.
That's right.
Oh, man, that's brutal, isn't it? So what does that tell us?
It tells us that we have completely misunderstood what the nature of the mind is. And you look no farther than the many, many, many reports of people who have near-death experiences in which their body is completely flatline brain dead. There's no electrical activity happening in the brain. And yet they report floating out of their body, and they see the doctor look at his watch and say, "It's about time I had a cappuccino." And then they come back in and say, "Doctor, when I was dead, you said it was about time for a cappuccino." And the doctor's like, "Oh my God, how did you know that?" And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very, very credible testimonies of those things.
So where are these memories stored, if not in the brain?
Well, this is the problem. Mainstream science looks at only four fields. You have electrical, magnetic, weak nuclear, and strong nuclear force. And those four forces are believed to comprise the entire universe in terms of its energy. More when you get into Russia, and a lot of alternative Western research as well, but mainstream science in Russia has identified another field that they call the torsion field. Now, in Western science, you do have a torsion field, which basically, in the Western model, is just essentially some of the spinning movement that happens within an atom. But the Russians have decided that this spinning movement that happens in the atom travels between atoms and doesn't just stay in the atom. And that's actually this whole new field which seems to be more coupled up with gravity than it is with electromagnetic energy. And there's been a lot of scientific studies that have shown some really compelling stuff to prove that this energy not only exists. In fact, there's a guy in Germany named Dr. Hartmut Müller who has invented a cell phone that runs on torsion fields rather than electromagnetic energy. And what that means is you could be in concrete bunkers miles underground and get a cell phone call just as clear as if you're on the surface. And because these fields don't travel at light speed, they travel effectively instantaneously. You could be hanging out at the edge of the solar system and talk to somebody in real time with no delay.
Oh, so there's something called the torsion field.
Right.
And it is all over the place, and you can use it, you can have a mobile phone going on it, and it doesn't need a satellite?
No, it doesn't. the signal only exists where it's generated and where it's received.
Okay.
So actually, there is no signal except in the phone that generates it and the phone that picks it up.
And you're saying that memories, human memories, are stored inside this thing called the torsion field?
That's correct. What I'm ultimately saying, if you want to broaden it just a little more, is that all physical matter, all space and time that we know of in the universe, is built out of this field. This field is more important and more basic to our existence than electromagnetic energy is, and that's the main thing that mainstream science models have missed. The Russians didn't, but what they did is they kept it secret, and up until the fall of the Iron Curtain in 1990, we didn't have access to this stuff. But now they've put out a lot of their research online, and I've spoken to many of these Russian scientists, and we really have some clarity now on exactly what they think and what they've discovered, and it's really, really fascinating.
So let's get back to what we were saying before. Your mind might not be as private as you think, and you are occasionally receiving thoughts that aren't your own.
It's more than occasionally. If you actually look at the total status of everyone's emotions in the world, you can measure people's overall emotional state by how the markets behave, because when people feel relatively calm and inspired, they buy stocks and the markets go up, and when people feel terrified and fearful, they sell stocks and the markets collapse. Mm-hmm. So if you look at market data, you have a long-term graph that illustrates everyone's emotional state, and there is extensive research to show solar cycles affecting the level of the markets. In other words, when the sunspot activity goes way up, everybody sells and the markets crash.
Oh, hang on, sunspot activity. What are you talking about there?
Well, see, here's the other thing that's a very difficult concept for people to understand is you have to expand what you mean by intelligence past the idea that intelligence is something that only happened in the human being here on Earth. Intelligence is actually the main characteristic of the universe in terms of the energy that makes it. And that's what all the ancient mystics and prophetic traditions say, but we're now having science that's actually proving that to be true. And you know, many of the quantum physicists, you've probably spoken to some of them on this show, have proven that at the quantum level, little tiny particles are responding to what we expect them to do.
Right.
If we expect them to be a particle, they'll say, okay, I'm a particle. And if we expect them to be a wave, they'll say, okay, I'm a wave.
Yeah, well, what I do know is that when you get down to the really tiny level of the universe, things start getting very weird. And like you say, the composition of particles, tiny, tiny particles, and what they're doing and how they're behaving, whether they're a wave or a particle or whatever, it is dependent upon who's looking at them, which is very weird. So what you're saying is you're saying that it works like that on a very tiny level, but then you were mentioning sunspot activity. Now, sunspots, as I understand it, they're giant hot patches on the sun that make a difference to how hot it is on this planet. And are you also saying that whereabouts those sunspots are, that ties in quite neatly with how well the stock market's doing?
Right. What I'm saying is there are various Russian scientists who have studied the flux of sunspots, which is an 11-year cycle, and made very neat correlations between the amount of energetic activity, sunspot activity coming out of the sun, and the amount of selling activity in the stock market. And what you consistently see is that there's substantial increases in warlike activity on Earth and substantial decreases in the market value during the times the sun is shooting out more energy. And so what I'm proposing is that, and there's a lot of other evidence to prove this, that our collective emotional state on the planet is not just something that we feel privately, but it's being modified by an outside energy. Much like if you're in a room with a bunch of people and we turn up the heat to a level that's very uncomfortable, then people are going to start getting angry, they're going to start yelling, there's going to be chaos and violence. Ultimately, if those people are locked in that room and they can't get out and they're burning alive in the room, it's going to be bad for them.
Right.
Whereas if you turn the heat down and everybody can relax, then they're probably going to get along and everybody's going to be happy.
So there are things that are turning the heat up and down on the sun. But when you're talking about heat here, you're not literally talking about heat.
I'm not talking literally about heat. I'm talking about if you analogize heat to the idea of your emotional body.
Yeah.
and the fact that something could be agitating your emotional body and making you feel irritated and cranky, and you don't realize that it's energy. You think that it's personal, and you attribute the reason why you're upset to the personal things happening in your own life, not realizing that pretty much everybody's going through it at the same time. And right now, we are in one of those periods where everybody's energy is cranked way up,
yeah,
and there's a lot of stress.
Well, I was just about to say, it's Kerrang! It's the night before. We're talking to David Wilcock at the moment. He's a researcher and lecturer and filmmaker. And what I was going to say to you is I have noticed, you know, in the United Kingdom at the moment, a lot of people getting stressed, obviously the credit crunch. But not just that, it kind of people being more irrational and being, you know, acting quite strange. And also a lot of people getting into kind of more esoteric stuff and you know, getting involved in more weird, you know, things like, you know, in terms of what they're interested in. Are you saying that this is something that's happening across the world because of these changes in the universe?
Yes, it is. That is exactly what I'm saying. And one of the most fascinating discoveries goes back to the practitioners of transcendental meditation, where they found that if they had a gathering of 7,000 people, and those people meditated for a whole week together, that the overall worldwide amount of terrorist activity, war, violent crime, car accidents, all of those things substantially decreased. In fact, in one gathering, they decreased worldwide by 72%. So here, this is where it gets fascinating, because although some of these things could be caused by sunspots or other astrological factors, various planetary movements, other aspects of it is that we can control the field ourselves. And when people calm themselves down as groups, then that has a field effect that will calm other people down. And we have wonderful amount of data to show that. Yeah.
So, David, in your research, what you're saying is, and I don't know how many people listening to us will have heard of this, but every now and then a bunch of hippy-dippies will ring us up or whatever and say, listen, we're all just going to sit down, we're going to meditate on love. We're going to think nice things, we're going to do it for a couple of hours, it's going to happen across the world. And like I said, I don't know how many people listening to the show are aware that this happens, but sometimes big groups of people, thousands of people, will all pick a time specifically to meditate and be nice. Are you saying that does genuinely work?
Oh, yeah. You have to understand, there's been over 22 different scientific studies of meditation gatherings, which usually are done on the level of the city that the meditation gathering happens in. And in one of the most dramatic examples, the people that did this were aware that this would reduce crime and terrorist activity. There was a gathering in Lebanon during the Israel-Lebanon war in the early 80s. And there was gunfire and explosions going on outside the doors of the building where people were having the meditation gathering. And they were actually looking at each other going, well, should we, like, run? Should we evacuate? Because this war is literally right outside the doors of the building, and we could all be blown up in here, or somebody could come in and mow us all down with a machine gun. And they basically decided they were going to trust the science and trust that if they did this meditation thing, that there would be this wave of energy that would affect people's minds. You obviously can't see the energy, but you're going to feel something, and it will naturally reduce hostility. So they actually decided not to run. They all meditated together. And sure enough, by the time they got done meditating, it was dead quiet outside, and all the hostility had left the area.
Wow,
and 22 different times, the cities where they did these meditation gatherings had substantial decreases in crime, violence, fatalities, terrorism, all that stuff.
This is incredible. I mean, like I say, I've hung out with people who believe this kind of stuff. I've never heard someone like yourself who's done all this research to come along and back it up. That's quite insane.
Let me put my tinfoil hat on for a moment and just suggest the idea that there might be power groups that know that this stuff really works, and they have made a very good effort of not ever getting anybody to talk about it because they don't want it to be used against them.
Yeah. That's quite possible, isn't it? Because do you know what? This is the next thing that I wanted to ask you. You're talking about how, you know, your mind might not be as private as you think, and you talk
Correct.
About the tinfoil hat. I mean, you say the mind might not be as private as you think. Do you think it's possible that sometimes people are receiving thoughts that are not their own? And if that happens, is that a bad thing?
No, it's not really a bad thing at all. One of the most famous authors of the 20th century, Norman Mailer, moved into an apartment flat, and he started out a novel where he was writing about a group of characters, and as the novel went on, he inserted a Russian character, which originally was a minor character. The Russian character became a spy as he kept writing the novel, and he ended up working the entire novel around this spy. And the whole story was how the novel, the guy was a double agent, and he was, basically infiltrating this country and all this stuff. When Mailer finished the novel, it turns out, and I believe the novel is called Barbary Shore. Mm-hmm. When he finished the novel, it turned out that one floor above him on the other side of the building that he was living in was a Russian spy who was a double agent. And all the stuff that he was writing into his novel was very specifically related to what was going on with this spy. So there's an example of somebody who appears to have picked up on the thoughts of somebody living near him as if they were his own imagination. And this guy, this Russian spy, this is considered one of the 10 greatest coincidences in human history. You can read about it online, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean...
But it's not a coincidence.
I'm thinking that you're kind of looking at the brain as being something that receives and transmits thoughts like a radio set would, you know? Like, do you know what I mean? Rather than...
That's exactly right.
So is that actually, can I receive thoughts? Can you receive thoughts and transmit them? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, I'm saying we're doing that all the time. The problem is that we have, well, it's not a problem. It's actually a blessing. The blessing is that nature has given us a biasing mechanism that avoids us from going schizophrenic. And that biasing mechanism is that when thoughts float in, we interpret them as personal. But there are multiple studies that have been done that show that if you live next door to someone, that the rate at which you breathe, the rate at which your heart rate is pumping, the rate at which the electrical activity is happening on your skin, all of these physiological factors synchronize with the body of the person who lives next door to you. Even if you never talk to the guy that you live next door to, which I know in London probably happens all the time.
Mm.
It sure does here in L.A. So this is not just pseudoscience. This is stuff that's been studied, and this is stuff that's been laboratory documented. There's a guy named Dr. William Broad who has shown that you can have somebody in a room and have a secret camera aimed at them, and they don't even realize it, and you wire up their skin for how much electrical activity they have. And when you have someone stare at them in a monitor in another room, then that person's electrical activity that's being stared at goes way, way up, and they have no idea they're being stared at. They don't feel anything. They don't notice anything. But their body does. So a lot of times, animals seem to be much more attuned to this stuff than we are. That's why when you're getting ready to have an earthquake or something, all the animals flee the area. And we don't feel anything, and then we get hit. But the animals seem to know something's coming.
So have we been talked out of this ability then?
That's the point, yeah, is we have this ego, and the ego will get little nudges and little signals, and we just say, oh, that doesn't mean anything. We've just gotten used to thinking it doesn't mean anything. So it's subtle. The problem is these kinds of messages never really hit you over the head. You have to be willing to pay attention to something that could flitter in and out of your mind very quickly. But another very common example is, when somebody else's thoughts float into your mind as if they were your own. I've noticed on multiple occasions that I'll be driving down the road, and I'll be in a meditative space, and I'll think, oh, I really ought to go to that gas station and get gas. And I don't even really need gas. My car's got like a half a tank. But then all of a sudden, the car in front of me puts on his blinker, and he pulls into the gas station to get gas. And I'm like thinking, oh my gosh, that guy's thoughts made me think that. And so the problem is most people are in so much stress that they're obsessing over all these details in their mind all the time. Their mind isn't clear. So all these like Zen Buddhists and Taoist monks and everybody are always telling you to meditate and clear your mind. The reason why is that the more that you clear out the repetitive obsessive thoughts that you would naturally have, the more you're opening yourself to the purity of the field, which is ultimately a loving consciousness. It's a joyful, expansive, radiant, blissful state to be in.
Wow.
It's what they call the power of the now.
Yeah. Do you know what? Yeah, David Wilcock, you have done what I said you would probably do, and that split my head open a little bit. divinecosmos.com is your website. I know you've got a load of stuff on the go. I want to get you on the show again in the future. Your book, The Science of Peace, is another book that I think people might want to look into. Divinecosmos.com, if people log on to there, because I know you've got a million and one other things you could tell us about. I want to thank you for joining us on the show.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. And also, people can Google 2012 Enigma, which is my video. That's a great place to start.